Welcome to the market, sponsored by the CME Group. Hello again. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson for our weekly visit at the end of the week at markets from the wheat fields of Kansas to the canyons on Wall Street. We do this every week, and we thank you for joining us for the markets and a look at some fascinating areas once again this week. So let's begin with Wall Street and what happened today on Wall Street. The S&P 500 rose today, helped by healthcare stocks. That came after President Trump blasted high drug prices but avoided taking aggressive measures to cut them. Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer each rose over 1%, while Merck & Company jumped 2.8% after the president, in a speech, said foreign governments extort unreasonably low prices from U.S. drug makers. His healthcare deputies released a series of proposals to address high drug costs. And one analyst in Oklahoma said they have walked the tightrope between cost savings for the American people and maximizing profits for publicly traded healthcare stocks. The S&P Healthcare Index ended about 1.5% higher, and the NASDAQ Biotechnology Index rallied 2.75%. The tech sector dropped about 0.33% today, with Apple dropping 0.33% after a 9-day winning streak that saw the iPhone maker edge closer to $1 trillion in market capitalization. Also weighing on tech today was NVIDIA, which fell a little over 2% on worries that a short-term surge in demand for graphics chips from cryptocurrency miners may be undermining the company's core businesses with computer gamers. So at the end of the day, the Dow Industrial Average rose about 0.33% to end at 24,831. The S&P 500 gained nearly 0.25% to 2727, its highest close since mid-March, and the NASDAQ composite slipped just slightly to end at 7402. Now, for the week, the Dow rose 2.3%, the S&P 500 added 2.4%, and the NASDAQ climbed 2.7%. Volume on U.S. exchanges today hit 5.8 billion shares. That's light compared with the 6.6 billion share average over the last 20 trading days. And with March quarter reports pretty much wrapped up, the S&P 500 companies appear to have grown their earnings per share by 26%. That's according to Thomson Reuters. Due to increased expectations for corporate profits and a dip in stock prices since January, the S&P 500 is now trading at 16 times expected earnings, its lowest multiple in 2 years. Boosting the Dow today was Verizon. It was up 3% after J.P. Morgan upgraded the wireless carrier to overweight. Symantec dropped a 33% after the Norton antivirus maker said it was investigating concerns raised by a former employee. But that's about all that they would say about that matter, at least at the moment. So, as we wind down the earnings report, what are we going to be looking at next week? Well, Walmart, the world's largest brick-and-mortar retailer, expected to report first-quarter earnings on Thursday, and the retailer has notched more than 3 straight years of comparable sales gains, but its online performance failed to meet expectations last quarter. The company is also in the process of fixing its international business and recently announced its decision to buy Indian e-commerce firm Flipkart. It also struck a deal with British grocer J. Sainsbury and sold a majority stake in its UK arm, ASDA. Tuesday, Home Depot, the biggest U.S. home improvement retailer, is expected to post first quarter results, and they'll likely benefit from the optimism surrounding the U.S. home building market. However, the company is expected to see a sales impact from the unseasonable weather as households either refrain from venturing out or delayed seasonal product purchases. On the economic calendar next week, retail sales numbers for April are due on Tuesday. Retail sales rose 0.6% in March and likely to have increased 0.3% in April. Business inventories numbers for March are also due on Tuesday. And then on Wednesday, housing starts numbers for April are expected to have risen to 1,324,000 units in March. That's also due on the same day. Industrial production numbers for April expected to have risen 0.6%. Initial jobless claims numbers for the week ended May 12th, due on Thursday, are expected to have risen to 216,000, and that would be up from 211,000 the week before. On Wednesday, department store operator Macy's reports first quarter earnings. The company is expected to benefit from a number of strategies it has put forth to combat falling store traffic. Macy's has been focusing for several years on expanding the loyalty program, growing Macy's Backstage, that's its off-price brand. Analysts who have been cautious of the retailer's comparable store sales growth will be looking out for some more signs from the company about a sales turnaround. Other retailers will be reporting as well. Department store operator JCPenney releases first quarter results on Thursday as it continues to battle declining store traffic and fierce online competition. Retailer Nordstrom is expected to report first quarter earnings, which will likely be helped by its online business on Thursday. Oh, and then on Friday, we take a look at the earnings of Campbell Soup Company. That's sort of always been a measure of the economy in the minds of some people. The company, besides making soups, makes Prego pasta sauces, V8 juices, and it's expected to report third quarter results showing higher demand for its soups, biscuits, and shortbreads. And then in the agricultural community, Deere and Company expected to release its second quarter earnings on Friday, and investors will be looking out for commentary on how President Trump's steel tariffs are impacting its finances. In March, Chief Executive Officer Samuel Allen said the tariffs would have negative impact on the company's finances. But Deere's business also faces some headwinds from retaliatory tariffs. Bank of Canada Deputy Governor Lawrence Chembry is scheduled to give a speech on Wednesday on Canada's economic potential. We do have to keep a number and pay attention to our neighbors to the north because they do have an impact on a lot of what we do here in this country. The governors of the Federal Reserve Bank will be very busy on the speaking circuit next week. I really don't have time to go over the schedule that they will be following, but they'll be very busy on the speaker circuit. And back to Canada for a moment. Canada's manufacturing sales numbers for March will provide a look at how the economy fared at the end of the first quarter. The comments by the CEO of Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett, about midweek, I found interesting. I'll share them with you because the billionaire investor on Monday of this week said buyers of Bitcoin, which he has characterized as rat poison squared, thrive on the hope that they'll find other people who will pay more for it. He likened Bitcoin demand to the tulip mania in the 17th century in Holland. The chairman and chief executive of Berkshire Hathaway said the mystique behind the cryptocurrency has driven a surge in its price. He said it does create a rising price, creates more buyers. If you don't understand it, you get much more excited. People like to speculate, and they like to gamble. Charlie Munger was even unkinder to the Bitcoin story. That's Buffett's longtime business partner and the vice chairman of Berkshire. He described Bitcoin as, quote, worthless artificial gold. He likened it to Oscar Wilde's definition of fox hunting, calling it the pursuit of the uneatable by the unspeakable. Buffett said investors would instead be much better off investing in U.S. stocks, which in turn are also a far better investment than 10 or 30-year U.S. government bonds. Buffett said that stock prices are elevated, but not in a bubble. He said he would much rather have Berkshire's pile of cash and equivalents be $30 billion rather than the $108.6 billion. But it was at the end of March, and good deals have not emerged. So some interesting comments about the Bitcoin market from Warren Buffett, chairman and CEO of the Berkshire Hathaway Company that held its grand party in Omaha, Nebraska a week ago. Thousands of people come from all over the world to attend that. Some of them for information, but some of them to get good buys on products that Berkshire Hathaway-owned companies give away at that event or either price very lowly. The one thing, though, that was pointed out, the preparation for change in the leadership of Berkshire Hathaway Company. Warren Buffett is 87, Munger is 94, and that means change is likely soon, not just for Berkshire, but also for the weekend of events in Omaha celebrating their accomplishments and their values. So that's a look at what happened, a little bit of what happened on Wall Street. We're going to talk about the government report that we got about on Thursday of this week from the USDA that gave us really the first estimate, and it is just an estimate or a projection on how many bushels of corn and soybeans and other crops that we will be producing this year. So stay with us as we join Steve Georgie from Allendale to talk about that report when we continue on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Besides all of the earnings reports and government reports for Wall Street in this past week, there were also some important reports from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. This is sort of how it works. The last Friday of March, we get the results of a survey taken by USDA that gives us numbers on planting intentions of corn, soybeans, and other crops. And then the end of June, we get the USDA report on actual planted acres to see how they stack up against what farmers were saying they would do back in the early winter season. But I look forward to the August crop report, because that will be the first report not based on historical projections. That report will be based on actual planted acreage, the kind of planting weather we've had, and that sort of thing. But the May monthly report does carry a projection from USDA on how many acres of, or how many bushels we're going to produce of the important grains in this country. So to take a look at those numbers, we asked Steve Georgie of Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois, to join us. And my first question, after we get an important USDA report, and I'll direct it at you, Steve, is, were there any big surprises?
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
You know, plenty of surprises in this market. And guys, it's a lot of fun when we get the first look at these new crop numbers. And so this week, we've got 415 million carryout is projected for new crop beans. And that was the biggest difference. A lot of expectations this week was that beans were going to see somewhere close to 500 million carryout. Came out at 415. So that was a surprise. But for corn, we do have quite a reduction from where we have this old crop number at close to 2.2 billion. Now we've got 1.68 is our starting number as far as corn carryout. That is significantly different than where we're leaving this old crop number. So markets are reacting a little friendly to that news, and rightfully so. So we'll see what weather does as we go forward. But those are some of the biggest surprises this week.
Is there any reaction from traders early on?
You know, some of the reaction, though, right now is where should we be? So where should we be relative to price? At 1.6 billion carryout for corn, and you had a futures market that was still hovering around $4.20, that still implies that might be a little bit too cheap. And so chances are we could gravitate a little higher if these carryout numbers remain correct. Now, we have to remember that we're using 88 million acres. That was the number that was given to us on this acreage report. So we have to use that. Yield right now for this report and this next report are subject to change. But the yield numbers, or I should say the acreage numbers, will not change until we get new numbers at the end of June.
Does it look like, Steve, that we're going to have a smaller corn yield this year, according to what the USDA is saying now?
They are implying a smaller yield right now from what we had, record yield after record yield. And so with this implication, do we end up having some kind of weather problems yet? Do we not? There's still a lot of unknowns moving forward that will have this market standing on end as we go into the next several months.
In that report, Steve, what did they do with the soybean yield? Did they adjust it?
They did adjust that a little bit lower as well, and they probably should, you know, but we're on pace with where we need to be as far as planting with soybean yields. So they're not going to adjust that too much right now. It will ultimately be the rains in August that will adjust that number. So USDA is going to probably be pretty stagnant with that number going into the next several months.
Steve, looking at that World Ag Outlook Board report, just to begin with here, I note that some people are calling for an end to this report or dramatic changes in it. They're not happy with the way these reports are assembled. There was some comment from the trade about that.
And I have to agree with you. There's a lot of speculation around these reports, you know, and it's we have to remember that it is still a guess. But what's happened is that we do have a lot of influence in our markets right now with a lot of money flow. So whether or not we've got money coming out of stocks, maybe into commodities, we've gotten this new dynamic that is going to keep a lot of volatility right now in our markets. And so we have to be prepared for that. But yes, these reports that we've seen, you know, they are causing a lot of stir because there are some significant changes.
Did that report this week assume some price changes for the producers, some higher prices?
It does, yes. And specifically for corn, you know, as we kind of talked about before, if you're looking at a 1.6 billion carryout number, if we have $4 corn right now, futures price, that remains a little too cheap. You know, 1.6 billion carryout still projects above $4.50 corn if everything stays the same throughout the year. And so 1.6, though, is friendly from these levels, whether or not the market sees that or not. But for beans, 415 million carryout for new crop, that's suggesting that we're tighter, suggesting China's needs, their demand is a little stronger. And that in itself could carry us higher in this time right now that we have of just excitement with trade.
Steve, do these numbers have a big impact on cattle and hog producers?
You know, I think they could. I'm not sure if they do just yet, but they could. What we could end up seeing is that if we do get, let's say we do get $4.50 corn, what is that going to do for the cattle feeder out there? We've had some opportunities to be locking in cattle feed needs and hedging some of these feed needs that we have right now, and probably need to continue to look to do that as we go through summer, just in case if there is any weather problems, which we're not projecting yet, but any kind of weather issues or any kind of demand driven issues, that could set these prices quite a bit higher again. And for a cattle feeder, that's not what you want to see.
And a final quick question, what impact will it have on trade with countries that need what we produce?
It's tough to figure out what that's going to do. When you talk soybeans and you look at what the bean market does and how much global demand there is for our beans, you know, we could get into a trade war with China, but the problem is that there's only a few stores out there. And so when you look at that, our demand for beans are still going to be there. Whether or not they're buying Brazilian beans or they're buying U.S. beans, as long as we're competitively priced, there will always be a need for our beans, and probably still going to keep that as we go into the next few years, even with a trade discrepancy.
Steve, thank you very much for your expertise. Steve Georgie with Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois. There's a lot going on in Washington affecting agriculture. They're continuing to work on the farm bill, of course. And, right now I'm not getting any definite assurance that they will finish on time. But a couple of other things this week. Biofuel industry, that was discussed at a White House meeting today, and the Trump administration said it will scale back the use of biofuels waivers for small refineries and count ethanol exports toward federal biofuels usage quotas as part of a broad overhaul of the nation's renewable energy program. And the changes are aimed at easing the tensions between the oil and corn industries, rivals that have been clashing for months, well, for years, over the future of the U.S. renewable fuel standard and whether or not we should even have ethanol in our gasoline. But the program has helped farmers by creating a 15 billion gallon a year market for corn-based ethanol. Oil refiners have increasingly complained that complying with the law does cost them a fortune and threatens the very blue-collar jobs that President Trump has promised to protect. but he also promised to protect America's farmers, as I recall. White House did not immediately respond to requests for comment today after the meeting ended. Now, the other issue that has been with us since the presidential campaign, that's NAFTA, North American Free Trade Agreement. And today, senior American, Canadian, and Mexican officials ended a week of talks without a deal to modernize NAFTA, agreeing instead to resume negotiations soon. That's ahead of a deadline next week issued by House of Representatives Speaker Paul Ryan. The failure to secure a quick deal underscores uncertainty over the North American Free Trade Agreement, which President Trump today said has been a horrible, horrible disaster for this country. I do know some farmers, though, quite a few farmers who would not agree with him on that one. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue getting back on the RV again. Another Back to Our Roots tour next week, beginning Monday, May 14th, to visit with farmers and ranchers and producers and foresters and agricultural students, business owners, community leaders, and USDA staff. The tour will last through Thursday, and it will include stops in New Mexico, Colorado, Wyoming, and Nebraska. Spending a lot of time in that RV, but I think he puts it to good use, really, because I've sat in on one or two of his sessions, and he does, as I've said before, he does a lot more listening than talking. Something else that's happening that's historic: Brazil will surpass the United States as the largest producer of soybeans this year, taking over the top ranking for the first time in history. The U.S. expected to harvest 116.48 million tons of soybeans this year. That would be less than Brazil's estimated production of 117 million tons. So they're easing us out of that first place, but not by very much. And then let's look at the closing prices as we wind down the market activity this week. Let's go to the Board of Trade, where we saw a lot of red on the screen today with the July wheat contract dropping 9 cents a bushel. They'll start trading next week at 498 and three quarters below that $5 a bushel. The July corn contract ended today down 5 1/4 cents, so they'll start at 396.5 cents a bushel. And July soybeans dropped 19.25 cents today, meaning that they will start at $10.75 a bushel when they open trade on Monday. And then we take a look at livestock, where they've had the 5-day roll. That means they have been rolling out of the nearby contracts into more distant contracts, and that had an impact on the market in livestock trade and futures this week at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. And so here we go with June hogs today ending at $75.10 a hundredweight, down $2.37. June live cattle ended at $107.62 a hundredweight. That's down just 22 cents a hundredweight. And the May feeder cattle contract dropped 10 cents, ending the week at $138.42 a hundredweight. So that's where we'll be beginning the trade on Monday. I want to end our program this week with a good feel story, because we get so much negativism and geopolitical arguing and all that. But I've long admired the Culver's restaurant chain. partly because it started in my home state of Wisconsin. But since they have been in the restaurant business with over 650 restaurants now, they have established a program called the Thank You Farmers Project. They established that in 2013, and what they do, they take the funds and give them to national FFA organization, local FFA chapters, and a variety of local organizations. I hope a lot of you enjoyed a scoop of fresh frozen custard during Culver's Scoops of Thanks Day fundraiser on May 3rd, because Culver's showed their support for agricultural education, and guests certainly did that because they stopped at those restaurants and paid a dollar for a scoop of custard, raised $111,000 for agricultural education and agricultural projects. Thank you for your Thanks to Farmers campaign, Culver's. Thank you all for listening to our weekly get-together. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.